Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
They say that those golden days when your children are little and sweet are gone in a flash, and I, for one, can vouch for that being the case. And while you can't slow time down, you can hold on to those memories. Most of us parents have our mobile phones stuffed with photos, those perfect moments captured digitally. But because we so rarely print them out, we don't enjoy them to the full. Which is why I'm delighted that this episode is sponsored by Bob Books, great quality photo books which are easy to create and will make all those wonderful photos much more accessible. Having spent years putting off the job of going through all these photos myself, I've created a series of them, documenting the Fogel family adventures year by year, and I've got to say, I've loved the process. The trouble is that we forget things, and going through my photos each evening has enabled me to relive those memories. And when the books finally arrived, we all loved going through them together, laughing and marvelling at those fun times. So go for it. Delve into those thousands of photos you have stored on your phone and turn them into something you'll treasure forever. As an even bigger incentive, Bob Books are offering our listeners 20% off their books. Just visit bobbooks.co.uk and use the code Parenthood20, all capital letters and all one word, at checkout. Valid until the end of August. Enjoy. Hello and welcome to The Parenthood. They say that a parent is only ever as happy as their unhappiest child, a phrase you might have heard before you became a parent, but one you can only fully understand when you are a parent. As a mother to a 9 and a 7-year-old, I find myself driven to distraction, observing their social interactions. The idea that anyone would be mean to them, make them feel vulnerable or not good enough, is horrifying. But the reality is, it will happen, because part of what makes friendship so rich is that our friends bring us both the highest highs and the lowest lows. We can have the most fun we've ever had with them, and the worst time imaginable. As a 21st century parent who spends a great deal of time wondering whether we're doing enough for our children, understanding the relationships our children will have is a fundamental part of helping them adjust, which is why I'm delighted to have Tanith Carey with me today. A parenting journalist and best-selling author, Tanith's latest book, The Friendship Maze, unlocks the secrets of friendship and helps parents support their children as they navigate the increasingly complicated process of making friends. Tanith, thank you so much for coming to join me today.
It's great to be here.
I've got to say, I really enjoyed your book. I really enjoyed the subject matter. It wasn't something I thought I needed to know about, but as soon as your book landed on my desk, I thought, this is absolutely something I need to know about. And, you know, looking at my children at school age, you know, yes, they'll come out with an education that clearly is very, very important, but as important to me is that social literacy, that social ability to make friends, to work out who are good friends, who are bad friends. And it's probably something that we as parents need to be a little bit more supportive over.
Exactly. I mean, how well our children can get on with other people, negotiate, compromise, have emotional intelligence, read other people's feelings, look at the world from their point of view is really key to their success in life, and something I think we need to take increasingly seriously.
Yeah, I mean, emotional intelligence is something that people are increasingly referring to, especially when it comes to children. I mean, why is friendship so important?
Well, I think it's one of the great unacknowledged pillars of their well-being. We talk a lot about bullying, but we don't actually talk a lot about how happy children's friends make them. When you ask children what makes them happy. They say friends is the second most important component to how good they feel about themselves after family. It's actually critical to their well-being. It's important to the way they develop because they choose friends themselves. Their friends are a reflection of their interests. The fact that someone else likes them makes them feel good. So it's really, really important. It's sort of the unacknowledged, I think, pillar of their well-being. I mean, I've written quite a few books, and I've looked at pressure in schools, I've looked at stress on parents, I've looked at premature adultification, but I felt that children's day-to-day social relationships weren't really being looked at as a possible cause of why they're not maybe as happy as they have been in the past.
And at what age do friendships become important? Because obviously when your child is little, you know, I remember organising endless play dates and they just sort of build their Lego and get a bit frustrated if there's someone else there.
Yeah.
But is it important still at that stage for them to have these play dates?
Yes, it's really important because practice is incredibly important. So even if your little two-year-old or your 18-month-old is just playing in parallel, they're actually looking and observing and sort of forming and getting to know how other people play. And then as they start turning towards each other, they start that reciprocal to and fro, that kind of let's pretend, that role play, that, you know, taking a toy, who's going to get the toy. It's so important. And I mean, one of the best things we can do for our children is to expose them to as much sort of social interaction as possible in a reciprocal way. So if somebody asks you for a play date, please arrange another one back, because seeing the same child a lot is one of the big cornerstones of childhood, of friendship. And so just really get them out there to kind of just practice those social skills so that they're ready for school.
And then presumably when they get to school, those friendships intensify and become much more sort of obsessive in a way, don't they?
Yeah, they tend to sort of, it varies with boys and girls. I mean, girls are very interested in each other, so they will tend to sort of look for a best friend if possible, or a core of besties that they can sort of play games that they understand well. Whereas boys tend to have a third thing, which is often football or another activity, and they play in larger groups. I mean, these things sound a bit generalisation, obviously. There are girls and boys that don't fit into either. But yes, and then by seven, they're very, very conscious of who their friends are, and they start to kind of, form different social groups.
When I was at school, everyone had a best friend. I mean, I'm admittedly a girl, and I was in an all-girls school. Is this something, I mean, I've noticed in my children's school that something that's not encouraged to have a best friend. Do you feel that sort of having one friend, a best friend, is not necessarily the right thing for your child to have?
Yeah, I think it's a good idea not to. I think a lot of parents put emphasis on, oh, have you got a best friend? But I think it's a really good idea for children to have a range of really good friends, because each friend can bring them something different. And no one friend can provide them with everything that they need.
And it's quite an intense thing, I suppose, for children so young. I mean, it's almost like being in a relationship, a romantic relationship, which, you know, you don't do until you're a lot older than sort of 6, 7, 8. Mm. And it, you know, it's that sort of reciprocal thing that one person's in love with the other. There's this sort of exclusivity, and it's almost too ambitious, isn't it, for children that age?
Yeah, no, I agree. Yeah, absolutely.
And do you think that friendship has changed in the last generation? Do you think it's more complicated, or is it us parents that are overthinking it and potentially overcomplicating it?
I think there have been some factors that have made friendship a little bit more complicated. I think social media means that we can now rank our friendships. We can actually see how popular we are. We can compare each other. We can see if we haven't been invited to that party. So that brings an extra layer of pressure. I think there are some other societal shifts which have also made our friendships a little bit, or children's friendships, a little bit more fraught. I think that things like when we maybe, as a general trend, we maybe don't talk to our children in as much. Maybe we're on our phones a little bit more. And I think that basically that means that we don't play some of the games that we need to with our children, which helps them develop friendship skills, like role playing and let's pretend and practicing turn taking with them on playing board games. I think also we've formed a more competitive society in which social status is seen as something to compete over, which is a great shame. And I think that generally we have become a little bit less empathetic, maybe because of the way we use social media. Social media tends sometimes to reduce our empathy towards other people, and particularly between children, you know, having a screen between them can mean that they don't understand the reaction that their words are having at the other end.
I think that really resonates with me as I sort of observe that, you know, children increasingly communicate via Snapchat and different sort of, you know, they have their kind of those chats in that medium. And I don't know, for me, it's so important to have a face-to-face conversation. It's so important to be able to read the facial expressions. And when I think back to, you know, what makes us unique as human beings in terms of all the other animals on the planet is the communication. We communicate on a much more sophisticated level than any other animal. And I'm sure that's why we are in control. And if children are now starting to communicate via social media, so via screens and not see each other's faces, are they losing what is possibly the most important skill?
Absolutely. I think you're right. I think that we do need to make sure that our children have plenty of face-to-face interaction and practice with that. And if you feel that they're not able to interpret those kind of facial expressions, there are loads of ways, which I talk about in the book, in which you can kind of quickly help your child to kind of refresh those or learn those, because it's so important to read the kind of the look of a look on another child's face. I think it's 90% of the communication is, or something like 90% is nonverbal. So we're really taking away a massive pillar of understanding if we don't actually can't see the person we're interacting with.
So from what you're saying, it sounds like keeping on doing the play dates,
yeah,
even when they get to a stage where they might be a little bit old or it's a little bit of a hassle.
Yeah.
You know, keep on doing those and ideally try to control whether or not there are screens there. Yes. I mean, I see it with my children who don't have their own iPads, but especially my daughter, it like sucks her in. If there's a screen she can be looking at, it's almost like it sort of seduces her. And I'm sure that if she had a play date, you know, and both of them had screens, they'd just be swiping and tapping and doing whatever they do on the
Absolutely.
Pretty rubbish iPads that we've got. So yeah, managing that.
Yeah, lots of play dates outside for younger children, because apparently they tend to squabble less and argue less, because there's less to sort of no less objects to row over. They have a more intense time. They have more adventures. They discover more, and that brings them closer. So I think more play dates outside.
One of the things you talk about in your book, aside from what we just discussed, is that there are some children that just naturally find it more difficult to navigate social situations, that find it harder to sort of thrive in a group of children. Mm-hmm. Why do you think that is? Is that something they're born with?
That's it's very interesting. We now know there are 8 different types of intelligence. I mean, there's obviously the mathematical, the musical, but there are also emotional and social intelligences. And just in the way that some children may come to the world very gifted at music or very good at or with a propensity to do maths, some children just may not quite have as much strength in that area. But just in the same way that if your child wasn't particularly strong at maths, you would go in and help them and teach them the skills to make them better at maths. The great news here is that we can actually teach them and help them practice those social skills.
And do you think it's something that schools are recognizing?
I think that gradually, there's an awful lot of more talk about this in America. And I, having been through the school system myself with my 2 girls and seen in every one of their classes, there were always a couple of children who were always left on the sidelines, and seeing the kind of the pain that their parents went through, it was very important to me in the book to try and bring that information, which I felt was around, basically to British parents, because it kills me to see the kind of the agonies that mothers go through when their children aren't the ones who are invited to the parties or don't have anyone to play with.
Because this research was available in America and conducted in America, but wasn't readily available to the British market.
It's one of those things that just hadn't quite filtered through here yet. I think it has started, and I just really wanted to disseminate that. And I've seen it help children, I mean, in England, and I just think there's, if we think that, I think it's estimated that 10% of children have problems reading social skills. So sorry, social cues. And that means that's probably like through, you know, in a class of 30, you've got, is it 3 children who was just stuck on the sidelines? And this has lifelong impacts on their well-being and confidence and their life chances. And we can actually help those children. I think it's really important to do so.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Well, I was having a chat with my mother recently about boarding school, which I was very upset about going. I was very, very homesick. And we sort of both agreed that in the long term it was really good. And we both agreed that the reason it was good was because I left with the most amazing group of friends. You know, I do look back on my childhood and I think as much as my education, the friendships that I made and still have to this day are, you know, the most valuable things I have in my life. So what can we do as parents to help our children forge these bonds and create friendships that are not only good in the short term, but good there in the long term, but also trying to help them work out what are bad friendships? Because, you know, we all see our children, don't we, forming relationships with children that maybe don't have a positive influence on them.
Absolutely. So in order to help your child be a good friend, the first thing that as parents we need to do is be good friends to them. So that is to be really securely attached to them, to show that we really want to spend time with them, to show that we value their company, to converse with them. I mean, I think one of the best things you can do early on is to not just to sort of be busy while, maybe this is a big ask, but not just to sit down and have meals with them rather than try and catch up on stuff. Have family meals together where they practice the to and fro of conversation. That's absolutely essential. Then I think also what we need to do is help our children think about what it is to be a good friend, because sometimes we just take friendship for granted and we don't think about what it means. So, for example, being a good friend often involves seeing the world from another person's point of view. It involves the skill of saying sorry. It involves listening. You know, it really is a to and fro. It's very reciprocal. So I think if we help our children think about those things actively, that will really help them. Sorry, what was your third question?
How do we teach them what is good friendship and what is not necessarily good friendship? Because, I mean, they're going to come across some, I mean, for want of a better word, bad eggs. You know, some children that maybe aren't necessarily compatible with them, or children that are just disruptive and not very nice, you know?
Yeah, sure. Yes, there are ways of doing that, and that is to talk them through quite early what a good friend is, what a bad friend. For example, a bad friend would be somebody who doesn't let them play with other children. It you could tell them early that it's somebody who puts them down, who doesn't make them feel good, who laughs at the things that they want to do, whereas a good friend is someone who doesn't mind them playing with other children, who makes them feel good when they're with them, who wants to do the things that they want to do, but also doesn't get offended when they want to go and do something else. And these are really, really important skills, because even if you can teach your children these skills at sort of 4, 5, 6, these are skills that they can take through to their adult relationships. Because what you certainly don't want is them having an abusive relationship with someone who... Because the same rules apply, is what I mean. Do you know what I mean? That, you know, a bad partner and a bad friend, they're very similar in their characteristics.
And if your child is particularly drawn to children or a particular child that isn't good for them, that you can see as a parent is not a good influence, doesn't make them happy, how do you navigate that? Because it's not as simple as just saying, don't be friends with Lucy.
Yeah. Exactly. I mean, children pride themselves very much on being able to choose their own friends. So if you say, well, you can't see Lucy, then obviously you will get a massive rebellion. So what you need to do is to ask that your child how they feel around that friend. Ask them their own questions so that they come to their own conclusions. And also, if you really feel that this child is a bad influence, it's very hard for a child to disengage quickly from another relationship, in the same way that as adults, it's not that easy for us to disengage from our adult relationships. It's even harder for children who are in a very closed microcosm of the class. So you also have to give them time to sort of and encourage them to go and seek other friends, because what a child fears most is being excluded on their own and having no one to sit with. So often they will put up with being sort of in quite a bad relationship or be feeling terrible because the terror of, you know, having no one to be partner with at PE or having no one to sit with on the coach is just so great that they will go along with it. So that's what we need to do. We need to sort of say fine and then encourage them every step. Oh, did you, you know, if they sat with somebody else at lunch, really encourage that, or help them, ask them who else they'd like to come to invite as a play date. Do you see what I mean? So just really nurture, and don't, I mean, children are very hurt almost if you don't like their friend. So try not to criticise the other friend, but just sort of get the child to come up with their own answers, I think.
When I was at school, there was a lot of talk around who was the most popular. Do you think this is still an issue? And is it a good thing to be popular? I mean, when I look back at my school days, the popular girls didn't necessarily do brilliantly at life. That popularity didn't necessarily continue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, there's increasing understanding what popularity is. There's two types of popularity. There's the popularity of being admired and liked by a lot of people, but there's also the popularity which is being feared. And a lot of the popularity we see now is actually, do you not want to get on the wrong side of that person? Because is she actually, I'm just talking the feminine here, but is she actually going to be mean to you? So I think you really need to talk to your child about what popularity means, and there's good popularity and bad popularity.
I feel that with children, we're having children sort of this sort of age, there's a lot of gender stereotypes when it comes to friendships. Mm-hmm. The idea that girls have these intense, complicated, fractious relationships and boys are a bit more straightforward and they just kind of get on with it and a bit of ruffle tumble and play. In my personal experience of my children, that is not necessarily the case. Is that something that you agree with?
Absolutely. I think we do boys a massive disservice by saying, oh, you know, they biff each other or they just hit each other and then they sort it out. I think, in fact, their gender has no feelings. So I just think that boys are very much better at hiding how they feel when their friendships go wrong. I think also they're trained from an early age, pretty unconsciously, to sort of present a sort of Batman-like mask of inscrutability. So in front of their friends, they also have to show that they have no feelings. But actually, they can bury them and they just find it very hard to talk about. So I think we also need to acknowledge that boys do have complicated friendships as well, and be willing to let them talk about it and listen when they have something to tell us.
And, you know, often for those boys that are maybe a little bit more sensitive, you know, they might be the ones that feel slightly outside the group and more difficult to sort of jump into the middle of the whatever it is, the scrum, the football match, because they just feel a little bit more emotionally vulnerable.
Well, yeah, what I talk about in the book is that boys have a hierarchy within their friendship groups as well. And although initially that can sound a little bracing, if your child can understand what role they have within that social group, it can make it more understandable when things go wrong or if someone's mean to them, because they can understand the politics within the group. Now, that sounds a little bit complicated, but if you read the book, it sort of does make sense. So you will, in the same way you have the queen bee, you've got the ringleader, in the girls' groups, in the same way you have the sidekick in the girls' groups, you have the associate in the boys' groups. So, and they all have their different roles. So some will be targets, some will be leaders, some will be the wannabes. Once we understand those mechanics, we can help our child understand that it's not just them when things go wrong. So that's what I'm quite keen on in the book, to really dissect that, those kind of social hierarchies.
I mean, obviously, it's really important for children to be exposed to a sort of myriad of different personalities, and not everyone is going to be nice, and a little bit of meanness is quite good in terms of building resilience. What do you think, you know, if your child is, I mean, should your child only hang out with nice children, or is it quite healthy for them to see some little, God for one, I want to swear. You know, is it quite good for them to experience that and look at that from afar and learn from other people's mistakes?
Absolutely. What we, I think, have missed in the emphasis on bullying is that it's perfectly normal for children to have social conflicts. Whenever humans get together, they have different wants and needs, and they fall out, and that is part of life. And if we try to protect our children from that, then they don't learn the skills of compromise and negotiation and finding a way out of that. So we really need to just accept that, you know, it's perfectly normal for a 4 or 5 year old child to say to another, I don't want to play with you, or you're not my friend. That is just an unfortunate part of life. That doesn't mean that we should tolerate organized or mismatched or persecution or bullying, but it does mean that day to day we have to accept that children will have normal social conflict, and to help them realize that it's not the end of the world and give them some perspective on it. Because when we fly in with our Batman cloaks and our Superman cloaks in trying to save them, it just teaches them that we have to go and rescue them, and they don't really have the skills themselves, which they actually really do need to practice.
And I suppose, you know, not to be too quick to call it bullying, to know that there's a certain amount of that is normal, but it is not bullying.
Mm. I think in the last 20 years, we've become very, very hypervigilant to bullying. And rightly so, because we see some of the the horrible consequences of sort of like suicide and self-harm and all the rest of it. But bullying is now being re-diagnosed, and it has to be intentional. It has to be over a long term, and it has to be intended to cause harm, and it has to be by a more socially powerful child towards a less socially powerful child. So if your child is being called names by another child in the playground, but that they're really kind of social equals and it's not happening all the time, that really isn't something too much. It's upsetting, obviously, for you and for them, but it's not something to get overly worked up about. I mean, if you ask children, 100% of children will say that they've been called names at one time or another. And that really is part of playground politics. But I mean, if it is a child, if someone is persecuting your child, is more socially powerful and really, really wants to hurt them, then that's the time to get involved. But otherwise, try and leave them to it.
And I guess if you reflect on your upbringing, you know, we all, I'm sure, were, you know, people were mean to you. I remember people being incredibly mean to me.
Absolutely.
And you stuff survived. That I wouldn't want my child to experience. But it definitely made me a more resilient person.
Yeah. What we tend to do is when we hear somebody's been mean to our child, we tend to remember the worst incident that we ever had and how awful it was and how devastated we were. What we forget is all the hundreds and hundreds and thousands of other small incidents that we coped with perfectly well. So we really have to bring our adult perspective so that we don't get too emotionally overwrought about it.
I was talking to a friend of mine who said that when he first went to school, children were really mean to him for about 2 years. I mean, he just was the sort of odd one out and no one liked him. And he said he stopped caring and then they stopped being mean to him. But he said that that conflict made him the strong person that he is today. And he said, actually, I wouldn't swap that for the world because I wouldn't have been that person had I not been exposed to that.
What I like actually is happening in schools at the moment is teachers are increasingly saying that acknowledging that if a child is a little bit unusual or different, that they will say to the class, well, actually, you know, it's really good to have unusual children in the class to actually acknowledge that. And I've heard that happen quite well. And it sounds kind of like you're stigmatizing the child, but actually what you're doing is giving children an appreciation of why that child is interesting or a little bit unique, and showing them actually that it's okay to be outside of that box. And I think what we're also seeing is that I know that teachers have a lot to do, but they really do see the whole politics of the classroom and who's being left out and what's happening. They really can help by directly addressing these issues with children and also helping those children who are maybe really kind of being excluded a lot. So, yeah, I mean, I think that, as I say, I think there's an increasing appreciation that being different is not necessarily not being likeable. Do you see what I mean?
If your child is struggling to make friends, is it better to sort of involve them in lots of clubs and sort of team activities, or is it better to sort of engineer one-on-one or small group situations in which they can build more intense relationships?
Well, what I think is really important is because school classrooms are very hierarchical socially, and they can have a lot of politics, and these children do get utterly fed up with each other and then they fall out. I think it's really important to foster friendships outside school. So I'm a big believer in all my books in the concept of spark. So every child has something that they're naturally drawn to. And so that means it's a great thing to sort of find an extracurricular activity which is based around a child's spark. And then by going to that extracurricular activity, which is they are intensely interested in, they will meet other children who are also on their same level and have the same interests. So you're already off to a great start. And you've already got a child who, when things go wrong at school, has a great set of friends outside school. So what happens in school doesn't seem so catastrophic or awful, because we've all had children come home and go, oh, it's terrible and everyone hates me. But yeah, but you've got friends here. You're going to see those friends today, and then everything doesn't seem quite as bad. I think we spend too much time concentrating on school friendships and not enough on nurturing friendships outside of that arena.
Yeah, and children also tend to catastrophize when they come home from school. You know, the criticism, the school food was way worse than it actually is. You know, the lesson was way more boring than it actually was, and people were way meaner. And I think we, as parents, we slightly need to take our children's comments about school that we know is a safe environment full of people who really genuinely care and know what they're doing with a bit of a pinch of salt, and not sort of race back to school with endless complaints.
Yeah, they're just passing you their hot potatoes and just trying to sort of, you know, they just want you to listen. They just want to offload. And you just, I think, just to listen without judgment and just with empathy and go, okay, yeah, that sounds like that was hard. But yeah, you know, you got through it. You're here now. Fine, don't worry. Yeah, I think a bit of that is good. Yeah.
One of the things I've seen recently in the media is this idea, you see it a lot on social media, you know, I am my daughter's best friend. Mm. We're best friends, we're besties, we go out together, we have our nails painted together. Is this a good thing or is it not a good thing? Should we be mothers to our children? Should be, you know, best friends don't necessarily pick up their friends on when the behaviour is not good, have difficult conversations that, you know, the recipient is not going to like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that obviously be a great friend to your child is one thing, but you are not their equal and they are not your equal. You have totally different sort of spaces within this relationship. And I think that being a best friend with your child implies that you're giving them far more information about yourself than you really need to load them with. Mm-hmm. Because at the end of the day, you are always a parent to them and you are the most important person in the world to them. And I think it helps to keep some authority. And so, I'm very, very, very close to my children, but I wouldn't dream of calling myself their best friend. I mean, they have their own best friends. It's sort of like their social relationships are their social relationships. My relationship with them is parental.
And also, I guess, a lot of the issue, you know, in a sort of best friend relationship, it's equal, it's give and take. And a lot of our issues as adults are way too complex for them to sort of burden. And actually being children, they're very aware of what makes you happy. And if you're sort of telling them how unhappy you are about something, that's almost too much for them to deal with emotionally.
Absolutely. You're their barometer. I mean, you know, you set the emotional thermostat in your home. You know, your happiness, your stress, is incredibly contagious to them. So really you need to look to yourself first and then create a home environment in which there is sort of emotional stability and then your child will thrive within that. But not to depend or to treat your child as some sort of like, you know, so somebody to advise you or to offload to. I think that those boundaries need to be kept in place.
I think it all comes back to that communication. As you know, with all these podcasts that we do, it all comes back to communication. Mm. If you as a mother were to make just a couple of sort of resolutions in terms of trying to be a better mother, in terms of helping your child be a better communicator and therefore foster better relationships with their peers, what would that be?
Oh, for my children?
Yeah, or just generally, you know. But if it's you and your children, that's fine too. Would there be a sort of daily ritual that you do or would there...
I think that every child, no matter how old they are, and that, you know, my children are 14 and 17, whatever age your child is, they actually want more time with you and they want more undivided time with you and they want time which is just about them and in which you can really, really talk and listen and all the rest of it. I think in the same way as you say, communication is everything, time is so important and it's something we're increasingly short of. And I see whenever I spend more time with my children, things always improve. So yeah, it would definitely be more time with them.
Tanith, that's great. It's been so lovely chatting to you. It's such a great topic and I'm so happy that you've read the book. I've got to say, I cannot recommend The Friendship Maze more highly. It is not only extremely readable with easy reference chapters and bullet points on how you can help, but I think it will also help you reflect on what a positive influence you can have on your child as a parent. It's available on Amazon and at all good bookshops. And after this, I'll definitely be getting a few more of Tanith's books. I'm particularly liking the idea of Mum Hacks, time-saving tips to calm the chaos of family life. Certainly that appeals after the morning I had getting my children into school. But she's also written a book called What's My Child Thinking, which I think is the question we all struggle with from the moment they're born until, you know, it never really ends. But thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you all for downloading another episode of The Parenthood. Please don't forget to subscribe, rate and review us. It helps boost us in the iTunes charts and makes it easier for other people to find us. You can also follow me on Instagram where you can find out what I'm recording next and even let me know what you want to be hearing. I'm @marina.fogel. But in the meantime, thanks for listening and from Tanith and me, goodbye.